This morning, as I mentioned, we've got the second mark of a disciple of Jesus, what I'm calling a supreme love for Christ. So as I was preparing this week, there were kind of two things that became really clear. Number one, there's almost not a clearer theological principle in the Bible than God's desire for us to have a supreme, undying, incorruptible, an incomparable love for Jesus. On the other hand, when I was putting together the syllabus, I knew this was a mark of a disciple that I wanted to bring out. On the other hand, it's a big topic, and so to be able to condense it down to, you know, my little 25 minutes of talking was a challenge. And so I'm going to try my best to make this what is kind of a complex theological topic relatable. And we kind of start what I would call sort of the foundation of this topic, which is a very well-known passage in Matthew chapter 22, better known as the Great Commandment. And so you guys all know this one, but in Matthew 22, 36 through 40, the Pharisees are trying to actually trap or test Jesus. And so they ask him, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" So we're talking about this Old Testament law. And he said to them, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind." Other accounts of this also mentioned with all your strength. He says, "This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commands, or these two commandments, depend all the law and the prophets." And it was interesting, as I mentioned, the Pharisees were trying to trap Jesus or to test him. If you go through earlier in Matthew 22, first the Pharisees come to Jesus and try to trick him. That doesn't work. So then the Sadducees come, and they try to trick Jesus, and that doesn't work either. And so then they're like, you know, this is really the third time that Jesus is tested. And it's interesting because some might wonder, why was this a test, right? The Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, and they gathered together. And one of them, who was an expert in Old Testament law, asked him this question, right? "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" And the reason it's a test is that there are 613 commandments in the Old Testament law. So to be able to narrow down which was the absolute greatest of 613, I mean, they couldn't even agree by themselves or on their own, right? It was a question disputed amongst the law experts of the day. It originally comes from Deuteronomy 6:5. And so, I mean, Jesus really makes it simple, right? Love God with all that you have. It was really kind of this first command of Jesus. And so we start there because actually having a supreme love for Jesus is really how we obey this command to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. So Jesus makes it really simple, right? How is this done? By actually loving Jesus. And when you love Jesus, then you're loving God. And we have a bridge then that I want to talk about just briefly, kind of going from this loving God with all that you have to kind of how that relates to loving Jesus and then having this supreme love for Jesus. And we start in the book of John. John chapter 8, again, Jesus was talking to these Pharisees, and it's a very long passage, but in the middle of his, really a dissertation to the Pharisees, he says to them, "If God were your father, you would love me, for I came from God, and I am here. I am not of my own accord, but he sent me." And the reason that that's a good passage for our topic today is that he was saying this. I mean, these Pharisees at the time were the most God-oriented, Old Testament-saturated people on the planet, right? They, in these days, You know, before Jesus came, if you wanted to know, if you had a question about God, if you had a, a question about who he was, you'd go to these Pharisees. And they knew this Old Testament law inside and out. And for him to say that they really didn't know God, that he is not their father. In fact, later in John chapter 8, he goes on to say that he goes as far to say that they are the their father is actually the devil, right? I mean, that's just mind-boggling. And so the litmus test for knowing whether someone's a lover of God, right? We go back to the old passage. The answer, do they love Jesus? Do they embrace Jesus for who he really is? Not just some human teacher, not just some prophet alongside other prophets, but as the very Son of God. So in this bridge between the two, we have this John 8 passage. And then we go to something that's a little bit more personal, right? A passage that, it's kind of a 1-2 punch as it relates to, okay, you really need to love Jesus with all your with all that you have in order to be able to, love God with all that you have. And so this passage, again, is probably very familiar to you guys, but again, it really hits in a real personal place as it relates to this. So Matthew 10, 37 through 39, right? Jesus says, whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And as I was reading through this, I thought, number one, Jesus isn't pulling any punches, right? Number two, it's getting pretty personal because I know what I think about my family, right? I mean, you guys know my family. They come to church here. My three kids, recent pictures, my wife. I would do just about anything for those four people. They're the closest people to me that I have. And, my kids need anything. They need help with any subject, with homework. I'm pouring everything that I have into those four people. And so to go back and look at this verse, I mean, you could do the same thing, right? We all have family. We all have these close relationships, whether you're married or you're not. Of course, if you're not, it might still be with your parents. You may have a sister or an uncle that you really love. And so, again, to go back to this verse and go for Jesus to say, whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. That's pretty, because I love these people a lot. I really love these people a lot. And so, it's very, very personal, and you can do the same thing. So the question then becomes, all right, what exactly does this love look like? Because if it's this serious, I mean, if Jesus really wants us to love him that much, more than I love these people, then, we need to pay attention. And so that's the next question is, what does this love really look like? So I've got two things that I sort of pulled out as I looked at this. Number one, it is to love him singularly and selflessly, right? It's to love him to the degree that you're willing to deny yourself, abandon everything you have, even hate yourself. You're willing to say goodbye to your family, your friends, your fortune, whatever it is. Jesus laid it all out. And the issue is to love him singularly, right? To love him so that you desire to obey him, to honor him, to serve him, and to proclaim him. And so that's why when we look at a couple of the passages I mentioned last week, the Apostle Paul, probably of any sort of post-gospel writing that we have, I mean, he gets this. Right. And I could go through all of the passages again, and I won't. But, even the Galatians 2:20 verse, which I often recite mainly because it's one of my favorites, right? But for Paul to say, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself to me. Kind of gets to this point, doesn't it? I mean, Paul really got it. And so for me to go, I would love to have that same heart that Paul has had, right? And so in order for all of us to kind of assess where we're at this love, to love Jesus singularly and selflessly, I put together a little checklist. And so what I'm hoping that you'll do is just kind of take this checklist and just use it to do an assessment of your own relationship with Jesus. I think in order for us to be able to say that we love him singularly and selflessly, you know, we have to be able to kind of check an affirmative on each of this checklist. So the first thing is, right, to have this love for him, you'd have to be able to say, I admire Jesus Christ more than any other human or angelic being, right? The next one, I enjoy his ways and his words more than I enjoy the ways and words of anyone else. So if you want, you could even in your journal that we gave you just to go, I'm not really sure about that one, or I want to kind of go back and pray about this one, or, you know, to be able to do it. This is one I've really struggled with over the years. Of course, it's about approval, right? I want his approval more than I want the approval of anyone else. And, oh, there it is. Okay. So Galatians 1:10. Some of you may know that passage, but in there, Paul is saying, am I now trying to win the approval of men or of God, or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ. And of course, approval, we want other people's approval, right? Which, I don't know that that's necessarily bad, but whose approval do you want more than, you know, Jesus, if there is anyone, right? So the next one on the list, I want to be with him more than I want to be with anyone else. The next one, I feel more grateful to him for what he has done for me than I do to anyone else. And that was at least part of my point. If you were here last week, I was talking about my good friend Brad Miller. And obviously, I'm extraordinarily thankful and grateful to him. But really, at the end of the day, I'm more grateful that Jesus ended up using Brad in my life, right? So the next one, I trust his words more fully than I trust what anyone else says. And then finally, I am more glad in his exaltation than the exaltation of anyone else, including me. So I think that's a pretty good checklist to be able to assess just where we're at in this desire to love him singularly and selfishly. So second thing that I think this love looks like is that it's a love that is not subject to corruption. That initially might catch you guys a little off, but you know, this idea of corruption, right? The action of making someone morally depraved. There's several definitions of the word corruption. I mean, for those of you in the computer world, right, a computer program can be corrupted. So something has gotten into it to cause harm or damage. And the last verse of Ephesians, really where I get this idea, you know, these books of Paul were really letters, right? So he's writing back to the Ephesian church, and he says to the Ephesian church, grace be with all who love our Lord Jesus Christ with a love incorruptible. And so I really kind of caught on to that because I like kind of that word picture of a love for Jesus that is incorruptible, because for a love to like that to be incorruptible, right, you'd have to have generally have to have some kind of protection around yourself and around this love for Jesus, so that nothing, I mean, we know all this stuff in the world that can get in and corrupt our love for Jesus, right? There's a lot. So Just some quick, actually, I've got four ideas in terms of how do we have a love for Jesus that is incorruptible, and then we'll go to our time around the table. A lot of this, by the way, is just sort of my experience over the years of trying to find out this very thing. Lord, how can I have a love for you that is incorruptible? So a lot of this just comes from my own personal experience. Number one, I think before we can have a love that's incorruptible for Jesus, we have to determine who he is in our lives, right? And because I'm finding more and more in the, which is called the North American church, that it sure seems to me like there's a lot of people attending church, but very few people who, you know, have made this determination about who Jesus is. Because when you make a determination that Jesus is the Lord of your life and the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings, kind of changes everything, right? I mean, many in today's world will accept Jesus as a real person and as a good teacher, but kind of beyond that, it gets a little murky. And so many of you are probably familiar with, C.S. Lewis wrote a book called Mere Christianity. Kenton and I went through that about a year ago or something. And boy, if you haven't read that book, by the way, it's a very good book. And so in the book, there's a quote, kind of a long quote, that he says that Jesus is either a liar, a lunatic, or Lord. And let's just read this together, because I find it real helpful. So he says, in kind of in the middle of this book, he's saying, I'm trying here to prevent anyone from saying the really foolish thing that people often say about him. I'm ready to accept Jesus as a great moral teacher, but I don't accept this claim, his claim to be God. That's the one thing we must not say. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus would, that Jesus said, would not be a great moral teacher. He'd either be a lunatic on the level with the man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool. You can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord. Let's not come to with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us, and he did not intend to. Isn't that good? I think that's so good. So I think for each of us, we have to make that determination. Kind of once and for all. Is he a liar, a lunatic, or is he, as the Bible says, Lord of Lords, right? Those are the only options to consider when it comes to determining the truth of Christ. One other resource, by the way, that I think you guys would find useful, if this hits a chord with you and you go, yeah, I really need to make a determination about who Jesus is, again, another book that Kent and I read together. Lee Strobel, who now just lives here, he's part of Cherry Hills somehow. There's some kind of a Cherry Hills Institute, but he wrote a book called The Case for Christ. And now he's got a lot of those, a case for the Bible, a case for, there's a lot of these, the case for books. But boy, I just think if you are making this determination yourself, that would be a great, great place to start, because he really, in fact, yeah, I won't go down that rabbit trail too much, but when Lee Strobel wrote that book, he was actually a non-Christian trying to prove that Jesus was liar and lunatic. And his examination as a non-Christian led him to, a different result. So a good verse about this, by the way, is, again, if you're making this determination that I've always found to be helpful, 1 Peter 1:8, right, says, though you have not seen him, you love him. Though you do not now see him, You believe in him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory. So as we're making this determination, right, we don't even have to see him. Or, you know, now we don't have, I've never seen Jesus Christ personally, and yet I made this, determination about him. So love incorruptible. Number two, I think for me, what has helped me is just recall what he's done in your own life. So I'm assuming most of you have already made the first, made a determination. And secondly, you just sort of recall what he's done in your own life, right? And as you do that, at least for me, I've had enough experience of Jesus absolutely meeting me at my, in my darkest hour or in my place of need. Or, of course, for me being in ministry, there's times when we needed $150 to pay a bill, had no idea where it was going to come from, and just got on our knees and prayed. And even as we were praying, the money was in the mail without us letting anyone know about the need. I mean, there's just all kinds of things that we can recall in terms of what he's done in our lives. There's a good passage of scripture that talks about this, because sometimes I think as we recall, we just have to do kind of a checkup on our relationship with Jesus. And again, the Apostle Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians 13. So he says here, examine yourselves to see whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Or do you not realize this about yourselves, that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you fail to meet the test? And so this is this principle of kind of examining and recalling is something that is a scriptural principle that Paul was like, yeah, it's okay to go back and kind of examine kind of, where you're at and who I am and what I've done in your life. And so, of course, I always feel at this point that it's important for me to say that, if you're here this morning and you're hearing all of this and, you've not made that determination and you're not yet a believer in Jesus, come see. I mean, Scott is an elder here. You can come see me. Any of the table leaders, any of us would love to just sit down and visit with you about that. So thirdly, this love incorruptible, sort of based on your assessment then, both of who Jesus is and where you're at with the Lord. Rearrange your priorities to make Jesus at the top of the list. Obviously, to have a love incorruptible, he can't be fifth on your priority list, right? He can't be, I'll kind of get to Jesus kind of when I get to Jesus, right? I mean, I think it's an important truth about life that, we spend the most time on time on the things that are most important to us, right? And so whenever I've discipled guys that have tended to be young guys, pretty quickly I can kind of tell, what their priorities are, where Jesus fits in that, just by listening to what they spend time doing. So if very little time is spent on their relationship with Jesus, of course, I know that that's something that we're going to have to, we're going to have to work on. And one thing I want to help them grow in. Of course, you probably never thought you'd come to a men's Bible study and see a quote from Gandhi, but I found this and I felt like it was good. Action expresses priority, kind of what I was just saying, right? What you're spending time doing expresses the things that are priorities to you. And so, I go back to this checklist, and that's why the reason I like this checklist so much. If you admire other people more than you admire Jesus, if you want to be with other people more than you want to be with Jesus, that's going to be an issue. And in terms of a love incorruptible, you're allowing things to come in and corrupt. So one final word, by the way, on priorities that I always feel like I need to mention, because pretty quickly this can get to sound kind of like a legalistic kind of, I gotta be doing all this stuff to earn Jesus's love or, any of that. And so I want to totally get away from that by saying that, as I mentioned in week one, guys, we're just, you know, sinful people who have been saved by the grace of Jesus Christ, and we're just often going to mess up, even as it relates to priorities, right? But I think that, you know, a lot of times it's about intent, and I'm trying to remember that phrase, right? The intent is 9/10 of the law, right? And the meaning there is you intended to do well, even if something went wrong, your intention was there. And so a good verse that relates to that is this one in Luke 12. Jesus says, "And do not seek what you are to eat or what you are to drink, nor be worried, for all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you." And so a lot of times what I find with guys is that they say, "Yeah, I'd spend more time with Jesus if I had the time to do it, right? I'm just busy, and I'm working, and I've got kids and family, and my boss wants me to do such and such and whatever." And so I guess what I often like to do is kind of flip that script a little and say, boy, Jesus even says, you know, we need food to eat, we need shelter, we need all of that. But if the seeking his kingdom comes first, kind of everything else, you know, he even says, and these things will be added to you. Everything else kind of takes care of itself. And so I was remembering, Brad, your lame icebreaker, although I didn't think it was that lame. You always say it's lame. At the men's retreat, right? And you said something about what is kind of your one hope for your kids, right? So I mentioned that for my kids, I've always wanted them just to love Jesus with all of their heart. And it kind of goes to this. This is kind of my example for this, right? Because if they love Jesus with all their heart, kind of life, the rest of life, I mean, Jesus is going to kind of, you know, guide them through the rest of life. So number four, kind of the final thing in this love incorruptible is, so finally, I think, you know, again, back to, you know, we are going to mess up all the time. Sometimes we won't even know how to have a love that's incorruptible. And so I just say, hey, continue to ask him in prayer to show you ways, right? Sometimes we don't even know the way, and yet, you know, Jesus obviously will. And so to be able to just to go to him and say, Lord, I want to have love that's incorruptible. I want to make you number one in my life. But quite frankly, I don't even know how to do that, right? And he'll show you how to do it, I think. I mean, if you're earnest in your prayers, I mean, we know throughout Scripture he loves to answer prayer. And so, guys, in conclusion, the command to love Jesus or to love God with all everything that we have, remember Matthew 22, and the way that we do that then is by loving Jesus with everything we have, you know, is a, hopefully you guys have gotten that connection. And I think if you do that, again, back to the Luke 12, I mean, seek his kingdom. Give him your life, surrender in the way that we see in Matthew 10, right? You know, forsake Jesus for nobody, have him number one. You know, he's going to, you know, as it mentions in the Luke 12 passage, these things will be added to you as well. So this morning we have another five questions to talk about around your tables.